Right, I'd like to call to order the public board meeting of the Oregon Board of Accountancy, May 13th, 2019, at 8:30 a.m. This meeting is being recorded. Let's go ahead and go around the room and introduce ourselves, and let's give a couple extra sentences just because we've got some new people around here. So I'm Candace Frank, the board chair for a few more minutes. I'm a CPA from Bend and retiring this summer, so this is also going to be my last board meeting.
Scott Wright, board member, partner at Curtis Folks in Eugene. I've been on the board for 7.5 years.
I'm Julie Nadeau. I'm the licensing manager for the board.
Deanna Franco, I am the public member. First meeting.
I am Nancy Young Oliver, and I've been on the board for a year and a half now, and previously did a lot of work with the, was on the BOAC, and have worked on other committees as well.
I'm Stuart Morris, the public accountant representative. I've been on the board since 99.
Teresa Gahagan, I'm one of the board's investigators.
Jason Robinson. I have been nominated, so I'm not officially part of the board yet. But.
All right. And Sherry?
Sherry McPherson, president, OSCPA, guest. Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Michaela Fry, and I'm an intern at the DOJ office with EDG.
I'm Anthony Trong, and I'm one of the board's investigators.
Joe Sullivan, this is my first board meeting. Prior to that, I was on the BOAC for a number of years, and I'm a partner at DeLapp LLP in Vegas, we go.
I'm Joel Parks, and I'm the Police Compliance Specialist.
Kimberly Fast, the Executive Director.
And Jean Forsley, Counsel. All right, agenda review and approval. Now we've got a couple guests coming at 11. We think we're going to need to move things around to accommodate them.
We may. We have a couple of guests today, so Katrina will be here in person and perform and give us her PowerPoint presentation. We also phoned in Alfonso Alexander, who is going to talk about the Center of Public Trust Ethics module that they developed that I think you would be interested in looking into. And then later this afternoon, we have it scheduled 11:30, depending on where we're at. Mr. Smiley is coming to hear our discussion on whether or not he can reinstate a rebuild buffer. So there is that. But other than that, we, those are all the guests I know except for perhaps.
So we'll probably move some of the items in five or.
Right. So maybe we can start around C.
I see, and then we may jump to even some of the other reports.
Sure.
If there's time, if we're waiting to get to the 11 o'clock hour. All right, item three, appointment of board leadership. I would like to nominate Nancy Oliver as chair.
Second.
Any other discussion, any other nominations? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nominations for vice chair?
I nominate Stuart Morris.
Second.
Any other discussion or nominations? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And for treasurer?
I nominate Joe Sullivan.
Second.
Any other discussion or nominations? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? And since I'm growly talking today, I'm going to let Nancy jump right in.
do you want to switch? Or
so we're doing
switch, switch at the mic. Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
Sign.
Let's do that.
She can have.
There we go. That works.
Passing of the name tag. Exactly.
So, item number four, and then we did two? Did we do the
yeah.
Okay. Okay, number four, appointment of committee liaisons. Qualifications committee, Stuart, are you still?
Yes.
Okay, so is this something that we vote on, or is it just a...
Stu has already been voted in for qualifications as the other committees that we need liaisons for.
Okay.
Scott has expressed interest in the continuing to be a liaison for people's committees, so that's only connected to somebody actually wanting to continue on a committee. The other two, laws and rules, we haven't had one yet. We've had our first meeting, but do not have a liaison appointed to that committee. And then peer review, I believe, was Candy.
Right.
And so she needs someone for the peer review oversight committee.
Okay. And can you, Kim, can you describe how often does the laws and rules committee meet?
Well, like I said, we've only had one meeting. We have one...
We don't have one scheduled,
but we're hoping to be in May, I believe. Is that right? It depends. I'm guessing, I would hope that we would have enough meetings that we could be finished with any rulemaking by October. So I'm guessing between 2 and 5 meetings in a kind of a short period of time, depending on how efficient we are.
Okay. And what about the peer review oversight committee?
Peer review doesn't meet so often because it really depends on the kind of reports we're seeing, and if, you know, we don't want to have a meeting for one consecutive failure. So generally, I think last year we had only two.
One.
So not so many. Maybe 1 to 3 meetings a year.
Okay. I can do the peer review.
Okay.
So who would like to do the laws and rules committee? Is there any volunteers on that one?
Well, I'm also on the complaints committee. I wouldn't mind doing that as well.
Okay. That'd be awesome.
How would
attorney do it?
And Andrew, do we need a formal voting on this?
I think as long as everybody's in agreement, it's probably fine.
Okay.
So,
okay,
so unless somebody wants to like jump in and say they really want to do something differently.
And so we end up with a full board again. You could probably shuffle some of those if people are overwhelmed with more than one.
Okay. All right, so hearing no objections, we're going to let that stand. We're good? Okay. All right. And then, so Kim, you indicated that, is Katrina here, or is that, or she's at 11? Okay, so we're going to move that around.
Her flight landed about 7:30, so she will take her a little bit to get here, which time.
Okay, so all the NASBA and the Center of Public Trust will be later. So do we go to D?
5C, we can do it.
5C? Okay.
So we brought you the information that you were provided again today, last year, and then this time. In terms of the NASBA experience verification process, process that they had established, and it was concerning then, when I was at the executive director's conference in March, I brought it up to the other EDs to see if they were familiar with this experience verification process, and many of them were, which was kind of surprising. And I didn't get a sense that most of them really not only not knew about it, but were were just as concerned as I was, and I think that we are, maybe just me. But what's happening is if the applicant for the license didn't have supervision of their experience, they can either find someone they know that's a CPA, or they can, NASBA will assign them someone that's a CPA to do a 15 to 20 minute Skype interview and then sign off on their experience. And Oregon has a really, you know, direct supervision, ongoing supervision, you know, close contact, and for 1 year. So we are Washington's one of the states that accepts evaluation verification. And so that was when we got the first hint that there was really, it even existed, because Julie, I think, got the first call and they were like, well, I can just go through NASBA and have my experience verified, and now I don't have a supervisor CPA. And maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, we had a woman call and said, she said, well, if I can't find a friend who's a CPA who will sign off, I can use this service. And so it was kind of a, can I ask some questions? And then she was really hesitant to, you know, throw anybody under the bus, what I think was her words. But she explained that, you know, if you have a friend who's a CPA that will vouch for your work, then you can do that, or you can use somebody random for this service. It's $500.
I wish I could have a problem with both of those answers.
Right.
Shouldn't be a friend signing off on your CPA license who can vouch for you. It should be somebody who you've worked with and they may or may not be a friend.
I agree. And I think some of the materials we provided, there's a blog out there, at least one, but I mean, we found one easily that said, you know, use a CPA buddy.
What you don't know is that you no longer have to know a CPA to become a CPA. That's the
tagline.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like that meets our requirements.
Yeah, that it says, have you heard? You know what happened was, yeah. So it's just interesting.
So Kim, is the action before us today to make a decision about whether or not we want to utilize this?
Yes and no. So during the rulemaking process that we're currently in with the Laws and Rules Committee, I added language that would prohibit basically the use of the experience verification. But before we go through this process with the Laws and Rules Committee, I kind of need to make sure that the board is, you know, which way are you feeling about this experience verification piece? I don't believe the Laws and Rules Committee had any exception to that language that we proposed to them. But nothing's final. They're just talking. They're not making any recommendations at this point. So I guess a feel from the board on whether or not you would want to accept experience verifications for licensure in Oregon, or whether we're going to stick to our guns and make sure that they have direct supervision for their experience.
So can I ask a clarifying question? When they do this verification service, it's based on their rules, not them looking at Oregon rules and saying, okay, according to Oregon, you do or do not meet the experience requirement, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And this would be simply for direct initial licensure through Oregon versus a reciprocity or any, which will, I see later on in your discussion about there's some noticing that substantial equivalency is not the case anymore, or it's getting to be very different. But our acceptance of this experience would be simply in terms of their initial licensure in Oregon.
Or
we would be able to apply that to say that they're not substantially equivalent.
It doesn't seem to me like initial licensure, this would work at all for us. I'm even more concerned about the reciprocity of that's not substantially equivalent experience to what we would have someone do.
And reciprocity is a little bit more, it can be a little bit more difficult to figure out if they have that kind of experience. I don't know what you look for generally with that.
We've been looking at their employment record, honestly, and asking them direct questions. So if somebody comes through Washington for their initial license, for example, because we know they use that service, and then they apply for reciprocity in Oregon, but they've worked, you know, 3 years at KPMG, they probably would have qualified through our system. We aren't having them go back through the narrative process, but currently, at least, but it's likely, right? If we see that they've only ever worked in private industry, they don't list any CPA supervisors, and then we say, did you have supervised experience? There have been a couple that have said, no, never, 20 years working at a little office, but nobody's ever supervised me. So those have been the extremes that were fairly easy. I don't know. We haven't had any that are walking the line yet.
But somebody could go to another state that utilizes the reciprocity, get licensed without having been supervised, and then come to us through the reciprocity expecting us to accept the license, right?
Yes. Well, and I guess the troubling part is, and when we're talking about initial licensure versus reciprocity, is we've had many calls, I mean, at least 10 in the last several months, well, last 6 months, that have said, it's kind of, you know, I think this is what I'm planning to do. I'm going to go to Washington because I don't have to write anything there. I just have to do this, you know, check these boxes. And it's, I don't have to write your narrative and I have to get it signed. I mean, they really are like labored in their conversations with us. Like, it's such a pain to do the Oregon thing. So I'm just going to go do that. And then I can come in through reciprocity, right? So this is, it's a real thing for us.
Okay. So let's go around and just kind of give a thumbs up or thumbs down. For this. Joel, what are your thoughts?
Joel.
Sorry.
Is there a narrative that says exactly what it is, like on their website? I mean, because if it's a 10 to 15 minute Skype call, they're not reviewing actual work, then I'm a thumbs down.
There is a link on NASPA's website that you can read about the basics.
Yeah.
I think at one point I read like a 30-minute Skype call, which doesn't, I mean, still doesn't. But they're reviewing the work that's provided by the person. So that doesn't necessarily mean that you're providing the work that you didn't do so well on, right? If you're saying, oh, here, I did this project, and who knows if what they did on it, what they didn't, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Do they even look at the project, or do they just talk to you about it?
We aren't clear on all of that.
Okay.
Candy, thumbs up.
I have a thumbs down. I think that we want people who actually work for a CPA and know what that means. Actually supervise and that we know that they're doing the high level work.
Scott?
I can't imagine even a 24-hour conversation would be enough.
Deanna?
I would say if the rule says that you have to have a certain requirement, then this back doorway just flies in the face of that rule, and I'm not for it.
Okay. And Stuart?
Well, in past experience, we actually had one who had off-site supervision. It was in banking, and we approved it because she was getting the supervision, and that was really stretching it. So I cannot go along with free-for-all we're talking about. I want to stay with what we've got. Okay.
And I'm also a thumbs down. So, Kim, does that give you enough information that you need to go forward with that, on that one?
What does that do for what you have to do for reciprocity? I mean, is that...
No, it wouldn't count for reciprocity either.
But, I mean, as far as practical, what staff has to do when somebody applies from reciprocity, you're going to have to dig or have something else on your application that... states what they've done?
I thought that we, or maybe we already have, had a... We're trying to figure out how we can kind of not dig so much and have them self-report that they didn't have direct supervision and went through this process. And I think either we've done that or we're going to do that. Maybe the rule passes.
Right.
But I just pulled up an email that I got from Pat Hartman, who's from NASBA, where we were asking her all these different questions when we were first getting into that. And we asked about if the interviewer has... does the evaluation team review the experience, reviewing the experience, ask for specific work samples? Currently, we do not ask for any specific work examples unless the CPA deems it necessary. So they're not even looking at the work. If you're a good talker over the phone and you can, you know, say how wonderful you are, they won't look at that. There wasn't much here that they were going better when we asked them specific questions.
Does the reciprocity application address our competencies that we list?
It discusses substantial equivalency, which is where Angie has hung our hat, right, for now. But the one that we denied, the one that we denied so far, it was based on substantial equivalency.
Right. So question on that. So if... is the level of substantial equivalency based on state to state, or is it based on the criteria to which that person got their licensure in that state? I mean, if we said that, for example, Washington's the substantially equivalent, you are, but you're not, but you both came from Washington.
So, I mean, it's actually for substantial equivalency, that's in statute, and so it's like, if generally it's the 150 hours, like, you know, and 1 year experience. And so if they come in with that and they're level of supervision is not the same, it's not necessarily we can say no for that, right? It was kind of generic for reciprocity only, though.
In essence, either can there be two classes of people coming from what we would consider otherwise a potentially equivalent state? Somebody who qualifies and somebody who does not? Or is the decision based on just the general rules of that other state as being substantially equivalent?
Oh, so our definition of, we have our own definition of substantial equivalency. And it says an individual holds a valid license as a certified public accountant for another state that requires an individual as a condition of licensure to have 150 hours, have a passing grade, and possess at least 1 year of experience.
Does the experience say supervised by a CPA?
Does in the rule, and under reciprocity, because we don't have a definition.
Oh, under reciprocity.
Or is it a definition of experience?
Well, we did change that too in the rules. I can pull them up and tell you how we worded that to avoid.
I want to make sure we follow the rules in the interim until the rule gets tightened up if that's what needs to happen.
It says it has to be, in the statute, it says verified by a licensee providing any type of service or advice involving the use of accounting, and those sort of things.
But verified, not supervised.
Right, verified.
So we might not be able to turn people down for reciprocity until we change our rule.
Well, we're almost done with Division 10, depending on when we meet next. And we don't have to file every division at once. We can do them, two or three divisions at a time. We can do one at a time. It just depends. So if this was something that we felt was an emergency to get passed, we can certainly do that.
And I think on the application itself, there's different language.
Reciprocity, like,
right,
the request.
Right.
Let me see.
Sorry, she can't see you.
Sorry, I'm kind of back in the corner by the charger. May I ask a question? And it's not. I want to make sure that I'm clear that it's not suggesting that I'm in favor of lessening and I'm in favor of the NASBA nor Washington's like easing things up. But I've been getting some comments at the society, and I'm just wondering, because we can have some variances from state to state, so thus from Board of Accountancy to Board of Accountancy, if we were separating the country by three segments, say easiest to get into, which if we were talking about this Washington example, we might say, well, that's the easiest for reciprocity or easiest for initial admittance. And if we were talking about someone being the very, like the top tier being the very, most requirements, most challenging for this state, where would we think that we would fall in that? I'm getting comments that we are, that Oregon, again, I'm not suggesting this, but I'm saying the comments I'm receiving, is that we're more stringent than most others. I don't have a basis for that, but I do feel like I should ask the question. And I'm not suggesting open everything up, but I'm not suggesting being the very most stringent either.
From my perspective, I don't think Oregon is the most stringent. I think we're in a really good middle ground where we are certainly not the easiest, but certainly not the most difficult. And I say that in terms of the exam interest requirements. Experience requirements, we have just the 1 year, and the only difference really that we're talking about here is having direct supervision from someone that you actually know and knows your work. And so to me, that's not being stringent. I think that's being doing our jobs as regulators to make sure we have the correct applicants getting through to get a CPA license.
I do appreciate the comments, because one of the things that I'm hearing is that people are still having difficulty with the write-up. Enough comments about that I've been thinking about whether that's something we should try to assist in. And when I say assist in, maybe there's a program, program or an event where someone already, you guys work on that in the fall with that program for us.
Thank you. The competency write-up is an exercise that we want our applicants to go through, and assisting them with something that we want to come straight from them. I don't know that we would want to. There was a time when we would put past write-ups on the board's website as examples. That proved to be a big mistake on the end because we were getting plagiarism and just kind of changing names and a couple things and then submitting it, so it wasn't authentic. And so, you know, part of being a CPA is being able to communicate and give us enough assurance that they know what they're doing and they can, you know, specify that in their writing.
And I'm not suggesting lessening, I'm just communicating tied to this topic, some of the communications that I'm receiving. So, thank you.
So, Kim, anything more that you need on that one? Okay. So we get to move on to item D then. So review of delegated authority policies pursuant to delegated authority.
So we received two items on delegated authority. One was the policies that, or the delegated authority that was approved last May or April, I'm not sure. You requested to have it back, you know, once a year to make sure that you still agree on the delegated authority that you've provided so far. And then there are a couple of policies that you approved as well, and then there's a couple requests for additional delegated authority. Those are under the second piece that says policies pursuant to.
Are the policies things that we've talked about but not really put in writing before?
The policies, so the two that you adopted last time were like add-ons because they're not like, I don't know, like probably separate policies from just delegated authority period.
Well, there were the policies pursuant to the delegated authority, mm-hmm. So these were the, like, internet holding out policies, so sort of like, you know, we already have the delegated authority to do some of this, and so it's just sort of like a putting it in writing so that we had something to refer back to so that we knew for sure the board had blessed us focusing in on those. And then the delegated authority in general is just like more generic, and so the policies were to kind of like, you know, specify out. So we weren't just willy-nilly dismissing things about board approval.
And so the two that are added on the policy piece is good cause in terms of expired licensees. And what it says is that allow the director to determine good cause when an expired licensee requests permission to reinstate an expired license. Board rule provides good cause to allow an expired license to be reinstated. We have our first one on the agenda today, which will be it will be an important decision how we handle those pieces. So we may want to talk about that a little later on as well, or in the next session, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's good. Were you asking for the ability to determine the good cause?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Based on the rule that already exists.
The second one is licensees working in Oregon without an Oregon license. Should this be in a next session?
I mean, I think we can, I think you just explained why it's coming
up. So, lately, and we're fixing this too through rule, actually. So, we are getting a lot of reciprocity applications where the applicant has already begun working at an Oregon firm prior to getting licensed. So, say they started working in January and they're licensed in March, right? We see that a lot. We forward them over to compliance. Compliance opens an inquiry on both the firm and the individual, sometimes kind of both. Anyway, and routinely we will, you know, get them licensed as quickly as we can and perhaps send a letter of concern to the firm and the individual. If the firm's had more than one, then that, you know, takes on another level of investigation. The rules that we have proposed will allow a person from out of state looking out of state license to come in and work in Oregon, but they are required to get licensed within 60 days of this their first day of working. So not the acceptance of the employment, because sometimes you have to travel or, you know, so their first day within 60 days of get licensed. So I think that will help with this piece quite a bit. So those are the two pieces.
On the delegated authority that we've got lined out here, including those, the policies we're talking about, I guess one question, do you feel it covers enough?
The
whole package. Do you feel, is this too limited? Do you think you need more than what's on here, and it's just a slight incremental increase, or is this enough?
I think it's enough for now.
I think what we've seen is, like, you notice, like, Kim will notice patterns like this with all the people coming in and working, and this will be like, you know, it would be great if we didn't have to take every single one of these to the board every time. And so I think it's, as she gets further and further into it, in the thick of it, and topics change and issues change, you know, I think there might be need for expansion, but I think it's better to do it, like, you know,
there's nothing pressing at the door right now.
Right, other than these sort of two issues.
Those are what we're seeing. Well, we've only had one expired person come to us, but that could increase too, because, you know, every year now we'll be expiring another power in May, you know, in June. So it's something that we might want to be a little bit ahead on to figure out how we want to deal with those.
Nobody has any concerns with the delegate authority as described in this document? Any concerns? No. So we're not hearing any concerns. So do we need to vote on this, or is it just this?
We will need to vote on it, yes.
Okay.
So you just reapprove it. The way we did it when we did the delegated authority was that we would reapprove it every year, so we would review the actual delegated authority. And then with the idea, right, that if all of a sudden a change in executive director happened, we would review it again, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have something new and you want to rein it back a little bit until they're, like, you know, a little bit more seasoned or whatever. So that was the sort of idea. So we need to vote on those. I don't think necessarily the policies, as long as we sort of, you know, they're pursuant to the delegated, so as long as we just reapprove the delegated authority. And you have no concerns with the two additional topics that were added for the policy.
So question for you, that which was provided to us on the third page says we adopted this in May of 2017, with, you know, until May of 18, unless there's a change, is this?
Right, maybe we're a year behind.
Yeah, on the third page.
Is that the policies? Or
no, this is the delegation of authority.
Because mine says something different in the bottom.
Maybe that's what I was seeing too, because, yeah, mine says,
spring of 2019 is when we're supposed to be.
Sorry,
because this one's 17, but then there is an asterisk down here saying there were some policies adopted in May of 18.
Yes, that's what
we did
to the other two policies.
So then the copy
that I sent
you.
Yes.
Okay. Incorrect. But this is the correct one that's in the binders that were given out. And, yeah.
But that was what's part of the board package has an old date in it, right?
Yes, sorry about that. Nothing else has changed.
I make a motion to approve the delegation of authority with the appropriate dates.
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, passed. All right, item 5E, Chapter 3, Peer Review and State Comments, so Nevada and Wyoming comments.
Peer review was another big topic at the executive director's meeting in March. Julie and I also listened in on an ASCP peer review board meeting, maybe 2 weeks ago now. It was a couple hours long. They started off with the comments that they've received from state boards regarding the Chapter 3 changes to peer review. And I I gave a couple to you in Nevada and Wyoming because they sort of were kind of what my thoughts were when reading it over. I'm not as concerned maybe as some other states. Staff can go into the PREMA website through FSBA and get their peer review report, the reviewer provides. We can get the acceptance letter, we can get the completion letter, and the firm's response should they have required that. What we don't get is enrollment, which would be really helpful for us. We don't get the copy of an enrollment letter. And right now, what's difficult is we have a few that I can think of off the top of my head that had a peer review due, let's say, June of 2018, and we're in May of 19, and there's still no completion of their peer review, and we don't get any status reports from the administrative entity, AICK, or the firm. The firm, most of the time, has no idea what the delay is. And so we're chasing them all the time. Can you give us an update? Can you give us, I don't know what an update is. I haven't heard from anybody. I don't know what the delay is. I've given everything they wanted. And so there are things that I think could be a little bit more transparent to provide to us. When we go into peer review oversight committees, we redact everything that would even kind of identify the firm. So for that, I'm not worried about that piece. I think they have something in there with the confidentiality. We don't, even when they go, the PROC has a spreadsheet that everything is redacted. All of the materials that we have to support those documents are all redacted. And so they're in the blind. They don't know who they're voting on. They just know that they're, what the paperwork says.
The only exception to the confidentiality is when we do have some PROC members who would attend a RAB meeting, the report acceptance body of the OSCPA's peer review program, and then they, I believe, had to sign certain confidentiality documents as well to sit in and just to make sure that that body and that process is doing things the way that we would want them to.
Right. And there was something else in here with staff not being able to attend RAB meetings if we had any piece of enforcement, any relation to enforcement. So
we always said a board member would never be one to go to the RAB because that could create some kind of conflict of interest with another PROC, just a committee member. Mm-hmm. Could. One of the Wyoming or Nevada responses was their whole PROC is one board member, and so that created an issue.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I didn't see anything in the Chapter 3 changes for confidentiality that I thought would affect our PROC or our process.
I didn't really either. I think the only thing I would really want is more of the information that we're not getting. Mm-hmm. The delays, the involvement, those pieces. And other than that, I feel like I'm running fine with our peer review. I don't have any complaints.
So, Kim, what's the step for us being able to request that additional information on a regular basis?
Well, they have to allow us to get that information. So this is still going through the process. I don't remember, I know it's downstairs, I think, when their next meeting is or when they're going to discuss it. I don't know if you remember what
next
I said.
Committee meeting?
Uh-huh. Oh. No, the prop. What?
Oh,
the big changes. AICPA.
I don't
They'll be talking about it at our June regional meeting. So we'll hear a lot more about that during that meeting, and we'll probably have another report after that June regional. I'm not sure.
And do we want Kimberly to respond to the changes on Chapter 3 with kind of echoing some of the things that the other folks said about this is fine, but we would prefer to also have some additional items?
Well, I guess the question is the request that they tell that the AICPA or the administrating entity talk with us directly, or that the information be available that if we request it, we can get it. Because I kind of read Wyoming and Nevada saying, please tell us all this stuff, versus, you know, we're small, we don't have enough people, it takes too much time, so you tell us what we need to know. Is that what we're saying we want, or what?
Well, it depends. So the AE, so in our case, OSCPA, can only tell us so much. But I believe that's because that's what the AICPA tells them, that they can or can't tell us. And so, I think what would be perfect in my scenario is that the AICPA just upload the enrollment letter, upload the status letters if they can, because I'm sure they're communicating with somebody, and let us have access to that, like we have acceptance, or we have access to the peer review report, the completion letter, and the acceptance letter. So if they could just make that, we'll grab it. You don't have to send it to us. We just want it out there to grab if we want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as applicable to us. I wouldn't want everything.
No.
That would be too much. We'd have to weed through it all and say, is it applicable? Is this what we need? So I wouldn't want to set it up so that that's triggered. But the ability that if there is information that is needed, that we would reach out to them and it would be readily available.
Yes.
Okay.
And on our, all firms that are registered with our board are required to post their results, have their results posted for Oregon Access on the FREMA SBA website. So if we go on there and they're not on there, then we can say, listen, you need to check the box so that Oregon can see your results as well. And so that is a requirement. Some states don't have that requirement, and I'm guessing that they're going to start
requiring it
because they're going to chase a lot less tail if they have that just available to them.
So Kim, do you just need direction for us, saying, you know, repeating what Sandy or Candace just said about how to respond back?
I guess what I was wondering, I'm happy to submit a letter from Oregon with our thoughts. I kind of wanted to get a pulse check on if you had any additional concerns other than what was said after reading the changes to Chapter 3, but sounds like we're kind of on the same page as these other boards. I'm happy to draft a letter.
We don't need to vote on that. Okay, good. All right. Okay, criminal background criteria, Senate Bill 773.
So this bill requires each professional licensing board to study criminal background criteria and character standards for licensure, certification, or other authorization to provide occupational or professional service regulated by the board. So they want us to study this, so we don't have to get anything in too quickly, but we have statutory authority to do background checks.
But we don't do them.
But
we don't do them. Yet, or if we want to. And this says the part where it says each professional licensing board shall submit a report in the manner provided in the ORS. Is that something that we're doing now, or would that be a new expectation going forward?
New.
Okay.
And I think what this is really, there's a lot of talk about barriers to licensure, and I'm guessing this has a piece of that barrier piece with the background criteria. You know, if we ran a criminal background check and we found that somebody, I don't know, something minor happened.
Well, let's just say
automatic.
Yeah. Well, so like if somebody is in their 30s and they got a DUI when they were 21, you know, what would that do versus somebody has a financial felony on their record? Those are
the criteria we're talking about, mm-hmm. right? You know, perhaps if you've had 5 DUIs,
yeah, that it was last week,
be a little different,
yeah.
right? The other thing is kind of the character piece. That we would want to be really careful of figuring out what that looks like, because you know, moral character can be tricky.
They haven't given us the report yet to fill out.
No.
So in our, do we ask, do they have criminal, you know,
yes,
instances in their history? So I mean, in terms of the background check, all we're, what we would find there is anybody who's not being truthful on their application, which is already a problem to start with at that point. So
yes. We only ask about felonies, right? Or is it other as well?
Yeah, I don't remember how it's worded. I'm just and we handle those in office unless it needs to go further.
Mm-hmm. So what's the, where is this bill in terms of committee? Is it out of committee? Is it, what's the chance of passing the jury?
I have it here. I'm just going to ask a question about that. Is that okay to jump in? Okay. So it had, I've been watching it a lot. When Kimberly mentioned she was watching, I've been watching too. So it was introduced with the first reading on February 12th. On the 14th, it was referred to Judiciary, and on March 25th, it had its first hearing held. Hasn't had a work session. I was going to ask that because it looks like it's not a joint committee. It's Senate Committee on Judiciary. So I don't know whether Judiciary moves through a different process than like House Revenue, for example, or Senate Finance. But it hasn't had a if it's under the same process as either one of those, it hasn't had a work session nor a Senate floor vote.
So it's not been referred out of committee yet at this point?
No, that's correct. It hasn't had a second hearing, like a work session. So we have a hearing and then a work session. So it hasn't moved out of committee to a floor vote of the Senate. And then from there, it would need to go on to to the Speaker of the House and then be referred out too. So again, with Judiciary, that's not a committee I'm used to working with, so I'm assuming since it's not a joint committee that it's probably moving through a regular process.
Is this just a heads up for us, or are you looking for us to?
This was a heads up when we developed the agenda with the speakers.
Or do you want us to tell you what we want you to go, give testimony about?
No.
Okay.
I was kind of putting it on your radar. Should that become written in? Let's kind of get some feedback. But with Sherry's update, I'm not sure. I'll just have to keep tracking and see where it will go from there. But
I think we're okay defending how we treat people with different violations.
So we're happy to be, support.
Yeah. So Angela, can you, as we read this, and it says it's to reduce the barriers to licensure and certification for those who have, something in their background, a criminal background. Is the essence of this asking us to overlook certain things? Or
I'm guessing they're just wanting to gather information about how boards are handling stuff so that they can then pass laws to say don't do that anymore.
Well, that's helpful.
Yeah.
But are we able to say, hey, if somebody comes before the board and they have one financial felony that was, we're not going to license them. Like, we're not going to give them a chance and see how they do in the next 5 years and stuff. You know what I'm saying? Are we still going to have that ability?
Yes, we're still at this point, yes.
Okay. So information at this time, and if there's changes, you will let us know?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It feels like the regulatory similarity to the ban the box, or, the check the box, on the application process a few years ago for folks applying to businesses or companies for employment. It's like the next step in the regulatory side.
Angela or Kim, just to get some sense, is there like a, for lack of a better word, sentencing guidelines?
No.
So not a matrix that says that this is
right. No, we don't want to like box ourselves in and then have somebody be able to say that they're trying to do this. I mean, every case is different, but it's hard to like.
Do you keep it open?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Were you interested in the questions that are asked on the application?
Well, I was curious if you just thinking in terms of the background check, we're already asking if there's a criminal.
We do ask for felony. We also ask about non-felony crimes that essential element is fraud, dishonesty, or misrepresentation. The legal proceedings and professional license suspensions.
Do we have access to? So the Oregon judicial system information, but we don't have access to like other states.
Right.
And we do use that when we need it.
So if we have the ability to do the fingerprinting and the full background check, if that's some place the board feels like it wants to go at some point, we have it, it's statutory allowed, that a lot of like licensing agencies will have people get fingerprinting and you get the full background check, and then you get hits if somebody picks up a phone somewhere else. It's a lot to manage though, so I think that's where we have to move forward to utilizing it.
I think one of the things that people are counting on is that who's ever reviewing the application, they're actually not validating any of the information. And sometimes it's not even a matter of what was the nature of, you know, the what they did. It's a matter that they lied. You know, I know that when I was a Secretary of State, when we audited the lottery, we had to go through a criminal history background check, and one of the questions was, you know, have you ever had any kind of violation or felony or something? And one of the individuals that was proposed to be on the team said no, and they of course did run the criminal history background check, and it came out that there was a yes. The yes wasn't a deal breaker, but because she had lied, it was a deal breaker, and so she had to be removed. And so I just basically, it sounds like the process that we have right now is just a trust with what they put on their application. There is no verification piece that we're doing, right? Is that
pretty much
okay? I don't know that we need to dive into that today, but you'll keep us posted on how this changes?
Yes, and anymore, I'm sure that it will be mentioned something about licensing barriers at the regional meeting as well.
The one that we're going to in June? Okay. That'll be a good conversation.
We have talked a little bit about the potential of fingerprinting when we do an online licensing system. That might be an easier transition time, or like after it's incorporated into that system. I don't know if that's a...
Yeah, like it's a big deal to set up, and so you have to get through the police service.
Well, there's a lot, because it matters whether you handle it internally, or whether you contract out for it. And both of them are a big expense. Either way you do it, big expense.
Yeah, so that's you know, swirling around. There's something, if you ever wanted to be involved in background checks, we can certainly dive in more and see what that looks like on our end and cost-wise. But right now, what we're doing seems to be working pretty good for us. So,
Okay, so if everyone's good, let's go ahead and move on to item number 6, Complaints Committee, April 26th meeting.
I mean, what we have in the public session is pretty limited, so I guess I would make one comment. It's one thing that I expressed to the committee at the last meeting was the way the process is working now, where things come in many cases simply as an inquiry to start with, and then they're reviewed at a high level at the complaints committee before it converts into a potential investigation or it's dismissed at that point. The complaint committee, in my opinion, is doing a lot more work than it did before, and I thank them very much for that process. I mean, there's far fewer investigative reports that we're dealing with here at the board, and a lot of it's being dealt with at the complaints committee, so I really went out of my way to thank them for the effort they're putting into that and streamlining that process and making it work. So. And staff, for that matter, too, as far as the ability to get it set up in that way to get it looked at. So we're continually streamlining that process and improving it.
Do you want to skip down to 9? Yes, I do want to skip down to 9. Okay, consideration of settlement proposals, item number 9. You want to just go A through F here, Kim, or is there a certain order you need us to go in?
Teresa, do you want to go over the settlement for Carmen?
I'm happy to. It'll take me a moment to get set up.
Okay, I can start. So, let's see. Thank you. is in terms of work that the respondent took on that perhaps she was not competent to perform. And the other violation found was at a professional standards when the respondent performed preparation engagements that were not in accordance with current standards. There was found to be two violations. The board is proposing to assess the respondent with $2,500 in civil penalties and also assess $1,000 of investigation costs. However, the board will suspend collection of $1,000 of the civil penalties and $1,000 of the investigation costs, which leaves just $1,500 in civil penalties for the And she's also required to get some CPE in to help her with the pieces that she may not be strong in her practice.
And for the CPE, we've not just any CPE, right?
It's okay. Specific CPE, and the courses have to be updated by our investigator before we can sign up for them. And then we need proof of completion of those CPE courses. This is in line with the direction we got from the board, so if you are okay, we can...
Before we vote on it, just as a question, if, at this point, they're set up for Candace's signature, or is she no longer here? I mean, can we just pin through that, or do they need to be regrafted with new signatures?
Think about it.
Take your chair for a minute for signature purposes.
Can we do that?
Yeah, I think it's time. As long as
I started the day that way, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I make a motion to accept the settlement agreement, the stipulated final order, and agency case number 18-042 in the matter of M. Carmen Nunez Diegues, CPA.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, passed. Dwayne Clayton, and I'm not sure how to pronounce that last name.
Romich. Was this your case, Anthony?
Yes.
Do you want to say it?
So this case involved Mr. Romich was disciplined by the California Board of Accountancy. He did not disclose that discipline. And the settlement agreement assesses a $500 civil penalty.
This one didn't have much nexus to Oregon anyway, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Motion?
I make a motion to accept this proposed settlement agreement and stipulated final order in case number 17029, Dwayne Rich.
I'll second it.
Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It's passed. Okay, case 17037.
18037. This is Diamante Gerlach.
This was a case where she applied for via reciprocity and was sort of kind of, it brought a lot of things to light for us in our process and how we do reciprocity. But basically what the board had decided in the direction that we were given is that if she got into compliance, it's sort of, we don't normally do consent agreements, but because they are non-disciplinary, but basically the board wanted her to give her a chance to get into compliance. If she got into compliance, then we won't hold it against her. So that's basically what this is doing. So it's non-disciplinary, but it gives her the chance to get the experience that she needs to become licensed here, and also gives her the chance that if she decides that's not the route she wants to go, that's fine, but then she'll never apply again.
Did the board find a violation?
We didn't find a violation because then we would have to have this.
Okay.
The direction it was given was just
come up with something to make it work. Okay.
So as I read this, she could do work for non-resident. She could be in Oregon, do work for non-Oregon residents while working for a non-Oregon firm.
Right.
But she lives in Oregon.
Correct.
You know, she's working for an out-of-state firm.
Right.
that she, okay.
That was the experience issue of, you know, doing supervisor experience. It was, you know.
And she is going to get 1 year of experience working someplace other than Oregon in the next 2 years. That's what her idea is.
But she is.
No, I mean, this is what it sort of looked like, sort of a life issue for her. Like, if she really could do this, if she really, you know, if this was the route she wanted to go.
Well, but it says she will obtain, so it's
right, but then we give her the option of saying if she doesn't, she has to write something to say she's not going to.
Okay. So if she fails to comply with this, while there is a discussion of what we could have done,
right,
we, short of opening up another case,
we won't.
We have no other real. There's no hammer hanging overhead per se.
If she says she's not going to ever apply again, then there's no hammer hanging over her head.
Or that she practices in Oregon or organizes.
Right. That's a different, yeah.
Well, but again, we would have to be a new case,
right, or whatever, at that point.
I make a motion to accept the consent agreement made in case number 18-037 in the matter of Chris Dimiotti, your lot.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay. All right. John Michael Barnett, Barnett and Company.
I'd like to recuse myself from this one. Sorry.
Okay.
Mr. Barnett, a local competitor, and his brother's employed by my firm.
Okay. So we have four case numbers in this one, 17061, 18020, 18035, and 18036.
Anthony, are you prepared to?
Sure. So this case has to do with deficiencies in muni audits, some non-response issues to us and his clients. So there's four case numbers. We have terms for removing him from the municipal audit roster. He alleges that he has one muni audit client left, so that muni audit client has a pre-issuance review imposed on him if he does go forward with that client. And there's $21,000 in civil penalties, $2,000 in costs. $18,000 in the civil penalties, and the costs are stayed pending compliance with the order.
So you said $22,000 in?
It's $21,000 and $2,000 in costs. So $18,000 of the civil penalties are stayed. So he has to pay $3,000 in civil penalties.
And just as a question, in talking about the municipal audits, there's reference to December 31st hearings. Most, is it the one that he's got going, is it December 31st or is it June 30th? Well, most community audits are June 30th.
The irrigation districts over there are December.
Okay. And that's probably correct. Then.
Is there, can he apply for another muni license in the future, or is this cut him off from municipal?
So we have a term in there that says he would never apply for reinstatement of the muni roster.
Okay.
I don't think he wants to do this anymore.
I make a motion to accept the settlement agreement and stipulated final order in cases number 17-061, 18-2020, 18-035, and 18-036 in the matter of John Barnett and Barnett and Company.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? All right.
And I'm not voting.
Oh, and any abstentions?
One recusal.
Okay, thank you. Okay, in the matter of Catherine D. Matthews and Associate, case number 17039.
So this is similar to the previous case involving Ms. Nunez that you discussed and approved her settlement earlier. The board found that she had was in violation of rules concerning standards as well as peer review enrollment. The settlement agreement aligns with the board's direction. It assesses $2,500 in civil penalties, $1,000 in costs. This settlement agreement suspends $1,000 of civil penalties and all of the costs, and so she would be required to pay $1,500 in civil penalties in 10 days, and also to take 16 hours of continuing professional education focused in the technical areas of the SARs, compilation and reviews, and professional standards.
I make a motion to accept the settlement agreement and stipulated final order in case number 17-039 in the matter of Catherine Matthews and Matthews and Associates.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Right. In the matter of David Brockmiller, case number 18-039.
So this settlement agreement took a bit of time to get to where we're at today. The settlements, well, the violations were, violations of board rules related to the practice of public accountancy and the finding of conduct resulting in a felony conviction, dishonest and fraudulent misrepresentation. And so basically, the respondent has agreed to let he's going to be revoked. There is some civil penalties assessed, but I believe we suspended most of it, if not all of it. Okay. We also are allowing him a kind of wind down period until October 16th. There's stipulations on what that looks like is in terms of notifying the buyer, notifying clients where the records are going to be, all that basic things that we would want any person selling their practice to provide to the clients. This final order, should it be approved, would also be provided to the person buying the firm. So that's kind of the gist.
And if it's revoked, does he have the ability to come back and apply in the future?
So it's revoked. If he ever wanted to reapply, he'd have to take the exam if he experienced blah, blah, blah.
All right. Mm-hmm.
And he also agrees to never practice public accountancy again.
Okay.
I'm really glad you guys were able to get this done.
I make a motion to accept the settlement agreement and stipulated final order revocation of license in case number 18-039 in the matter of David Brockmiller.
I'll second that.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? All right. Kim, do you want us to keep going or what's our first? Okay, so we're going to just keep going. Okay, so item 10, review of public board summary for January 22nd and February 1st. Is there any?
It's been a while since I've written
it. That's the February 1st one.
Okay. The January was a short meeting, if I remember right. Yeah. Okay. So this is the summary of the cases that we went over last in February, the case settlements, similar to what we just got done doing. Recorded the chair. If there's any questions after reading this, let me know. I can try and answer your questions, but this is just a breakdown. Should have had some voting matrix. Not much to say about public unless anybody has questions about what was written.
Okay. Is it correct that our January call, all we did was review the agenda?
Well, that's all we did in public.
Okay.
Okay. So our next, we don't need to vote on that, right? Okay. Our next item is the report of the OSCPA.
Thank you very much. Again, it's nice to be here. I appreciate it. And I do want to, before I get into the rest of the report, provide some kudos and thank you to the Board Laws and Rules Committee. I think they, and our board was appreciative too of the proposed change for the 60 days when folks come into the state, and gives them an opportunity to make sure they're in compliance, get on the stick. And of course, if they don't, then that's sort of a bigger issue. But thank you for that. Charles Mello is our new board liaison. That's effective April 1st with our new fiscal year. And that reminder that our vice chair of our board of directors is the liaison to the board. And so Charles passes on his regrets as he had a work obligation today. So work comes first. So Charles and I will be attending the NASBA Western Region meeting in June. We always appreciate attending those meetings too. I attended the ED meeting when Kimberly was there as well. And it's a great opportunity for the society to, you know, have a great understanding and perspective of things from the licensing side and what's happening on the national level of NASBA. And then also, you know, it makes us appreciate the issues that the Board of Accountancy deals with as well. So some exciting news. We always offer, we always complete our scholarship process in the spring, and this is right before Circle of Excellence, which was week before last. It seems hard to believe it's been. But for 2019, we've offered 43 scholarships, totaling $115,800. So that's to the generosity of our members and firms and businesses. So that's a little bit lifted up from from over last year, but it's been indicative of the level that we've been reaching in these last number of years. So well over $2 million have been provided in scholarships since inception. So that's very exciting. And also thank you to Candy, Kimberly, and Julie. We had Circle of Excellence week before last, as I was mentioning. That's our celebratory evening, and between 250 and 300 participants. It's always a big night because new CPAs are recognized. They get to walk across the stage and receive a paper affirmation from Kimberly and Candy. And also we have new CPAs recognized, they're also recognized that night, but also new candidates, the scholarship recipients, parents come in with some of the scholarship recipients, and a variety of other folks, including milestone members for the society. So we recognize 40, 45, 50, 55, 60, 65 year members of the society. So it's a big evening, and thank you for the support for the Board of Accountancy having a role in that and recognizing those new CPAs. Also the candidates, I appreciate that. But other than that, we're off to the races with, you know, CPE reporting is coming up. We don't focus quite on that May-June as tightly as we used to. We still have a lot of programming. But one piece I might add, we'll be offering about minimum 75 of our seminars this year in both a webinar and an in-person option. So if folks feel like they can't get into the room, they don't want to fight traffic, distances are prohibitive, or they just add more time and expense away from the office, those options are available too. So I would see that we would just continue that push towards making sure everything's available. And so people can choose either to be there present or not if last minute things come up. So,
personally, I really appreciate that part. It actually allows, at least the folks in my work, for more people to attend more sessions instead of having to pick and choose because of the online option.
Thank you.
A big difference.
Thank you.
So,
pass that back.
Anybody have any other comments for the OSCPA? Okay. Do we have a report from the Association of Internal Auditors? Is that
no?
Was it the OAI?
Independent
accountants. Okay.
As their past chair, I can comment on what's going on. They've now got the new slate of education, just like the OSCPA. And in June, they will be having a bi-state convention with Idaho in Pendleton. It's questionable they're going to a casino, so we may not see them again. They've got some work on some of their rules and regulations that they're working on at this time to kind of update. Seems like an ongoing process for everyone. But things are going well with the association at this time.
Okay. Candy, your last report as the chair?
Don't think I have anything really to report other than to say it's been a really good experience to have been the chair and just to have been on the board for the last 5 years.
So I think we have like chocolate or whatever, but that's for later, right?
Yeah. Such a good idea.
I love that.
You that's what you're Kimberly.
So we'll circle back to that one later.
We have some official duties, we've got some settlements to sign.
Yeah.
Report of vice chair?
Other than tax season's over, thank God, and unfortunately you had a committee meeting I couldn't attend on April 10th. Somebody had a bright idea was that one. So there's nothing's happened excepting vacation.
Okay. And well earned. The next one is the report of the treasurer, which would be me, but Kim, we haven't had an opportunity to talk, so would you give us just...
Under revenue, where you can see it's highlighted in April, May, and June, the reason that's highlighted is because we are averaging much higher than estimated when our funds were forfeiting interest investments. What that really means is not that we're finding people for money. What it means is that Department of Revenue has kicked up their game and is really doing a good job on collections of accounts receivable for us. And most of that is interest, and so we are seeing an increase in that due to good things, not for us being meanies. Okay, so other than that, everything is pretty straightforward. We still have almost 21 months in the ending cash balance, so we're staying pretty even where we're at there. My executive director report, I think, says this, but we did hire 2 temporary workers from the Gulf to do our scanning project. That's costing us a little bit of money, but well worth the investment on that piece. We've already got another five file cabinets.
And 5 more out the door in 2 weeks.
So almost 10, 5 more file cabinets in the paper, which is pretty awesome. If you have any questions that you see anything coming out, I can try and explain to you.
Can you just comment on the IT professional services for the 50?
For the what?
For the 50,000.
That's an ongoing, so that just sits there until we use it.
Okay.
We need to use it before June 30th.
So what is the intent for it to be used?
Well, we do it every year, and it's for an IT project that we wanted to begin several times, right? So it's just been sitting there. We are now talking with vendors. We have an eye on a vendor that we like, you know, 1 or 2. What's great right now, and this kind of goes into my ED report too, but there are several small agencies, not only in this building, but here in town, that are all looking for exactly the same thing. They're all looking at these same vendors, right? And some are in the process now of building. I know 2 agencies here in the building that they should be starting if they haven't already started. Our agency was selected with another agency to work on general requirements for small boards. And I think that as an honor, meaning that they kind of trust how we operate, that we want to have everything laid out perfectly, or as much as perfectly as you can before we start the IT process, I think just because of the background that we've had in the past and not so good IT process. So it's hard to find time with the OSCIO's office to get this meeting started, but I think we're thinking June is when we would meet first. We don't have to, but it would be wise perhaps to spend some of this $50,000 before June 30. I have some ideas in mind on kind of how to do that, but I haven't run them through anybody except for my own head yet, so I'm not sure I want to say it out loud quite yet. But we will want to look into having a project manager, and so we could maybe perhaps start with that. Some of the boards have hired consultants for designing their requirements. I'm not so sure we need that, because if with all the sharing that we're getting with requirements of small agencies and licensing boards, I don't really think that we would need to hire someone to help us with that. So that's sitting there until we spend it.
So do you need anything from us in moving that forward?
When it comes time, I will.
Okay.
Well, I would ask. Yes.
Okay.
I think I can spend it without asking, but if we enter it, I would be in touch with.
Okay. So, Kim, do you want to continue with your executive director report?
It's going to tie into your executive director report, but you're making the comments that we've collected much more in our funds, and we're collecting a lot of interest on those funds too. But here, you're going to be talking about the budget. So, what our budget's going to be, our budget that's been, which you'll talk about, was adopted for 1921, is that correct? So how did this ODR activity get reflected in our budget that we will have on a go-forward basis? And again, you're probably may well be addressing that in the executive director's report.
I think this is more of just a windfall.
Yes.
Well, and then I guess that was my question, is whether the budget was going to, in essence, revert back to what it had been historically, or does it look like it is somehow based on a continuing collection of these old ARs?
That's something I will have to talk to the accountant about. She could say, what's happening when the collections are happening, you know? So I do need to talk to her about that. I don't know yet how that will be reflected, but I will certainly ask her. Okay. So, yes, the budget passed. I gave you kind of the ayes and the nays. I wasn't listening to that vote, so I just know what that looks like. But so we are all good and ready now. It was a smooth process. I was very nervous because it was my first budget hearing and my first budget preparation and all of those good things. And Candy and I presented the budget. I think we did pretty good. I got a little jumbled in my presentation, but that was a lot of nerves going on. But they were very nice. They were accommodating. They asked good questions. It was a good experience for the first time, I thought. Mm-hmm. One of the outcomes, and maybe I say this, I wrote this a while back, so I'm sorry, I don't remember everything that's on there, but there was an agreement that our key performance measures need some work. We're not really measuring perhaps what we should or what's most important for public protection. And they're not really measured the way they're stated, but more because our process has changed so much on how we do compliance cases and the inquiry process being introduced. The way we count days, for example, has changed because there's an point of investigation, there's a point of inquiry, and there's a lot of space in between there. So the promise was that in the interim, Kim Toe, who is our legislative analyst, and I will start working on some amendments to those KPMs. Once we've kind of fiddled around with them a little bit, I will take them back here to you all, probably maybe August or maybe even October, to see what you think, and then we can get those submitted and start counting. They don't want to wipe them out or change them too much so that you lose the history of the performance measure, but we just want to make sure we're counting the correct things.
They also brought up, they asked whether our fine revenue came into our budget or went to like the general fund or something.
Yes.
And had some concern about that gives us a bit of a conflict of interest in finding people more increases our budget, and we tried to let them know that we were very conscious of that, and we're actually fairly moderate with our fines in most cases, and didn't try to look at that as a revenue generating process.
Right. There is a stage or one that I know of anyway, that I read an article in the NASA newsletter, I believe, that their fines collected all go to public schools.
What?
Yeah. I don't know which state it was, but the fines that they collect didn't go to the public schools for anyway.
Okay.
They didn't stick on that for too long. They just kind of asked and...
Just to be conscious, yeah. I think that we are usually trying to be conscious of that.
Right.
And just to be fair.
Right.
So, the director's conference in March, that was in San Antonio. Andy wasn't able to come. Kid problems.
Spring break.
Spring break. Yeah. Spring break. Yeah, last year was spring break too.
It was right before spring break, so at least it was a little better. It was like the week of spring break.
It was a really, really good conference. In fact, I thought it was one of them. Well, not that I've been to a ton. But this one was really good. So they are continuing, like I say, pressing forward on changing the exam, this evolution. I think they've changed the name to Pathways now, or I don't remember. They keep changing what they're calling this project. There will be a lot of talk about that, too, at regional. They didn't focus on it as much. They just kind of, like, put the overall thought about, we're still going to think about adding technology, you know, so they keep reinforcing their vision, but they weren't pushing so much this time like they did the last time. I think they learned their lesson that pushing too hard doesn't work for the directors. Substantial equivalency was a topic. It was a spirited conference. There are a lot of people that kind of are seeing that substantial equivalency isn't really substantial equivalency because, you know, it was a scary conversation just that we're like, why do all these maps that NASBA has posted on their website show that we're, you know, oh, we're all one big happy family with all the same pretty much requirements when our licensing department basically has to go through and re-verify everything again because maybe you can elaborate on all the things that you do to make sure that they meet our requirements when they're coming from another state because it's just so diverse. You know, 150 is more or less consistent. I don't know, you know better, you do them out every
day. No, I think we provided that spreadsheet too. It's
okay.
Oh, yeah,
did we do that?
Somewhat. By the time they're at licensing, yes. But not for taking the exam and transferring them.
Right. So, maybe it could be a little time. I will.
Yay.
Are you also talking about the audit tracking tool?
No, just mentioning it.
Okay, so yeah, and that's basically all I'm doing too, is there is, NASA just launched, I think this was an ongoing project for some years, but they do have an audit tracking tool now that allows the CPAs to log in their CPE and enter, upload everything to us. I don't know exactly how it all works because it was a longer presentation, but the PowerPoint was so small that you couldn't get the whole feel of it because you weren't, but it sounds wonderful as soon as we get more information about it. I'm not sure when, I know that there's a few states that are piloting right now, I believe. I don't know how many more jumped onto that bandwagon yet.
The self-reporting electronically of the CPE for a couple of the other, like my CISA certification, that is great. Because you take it and you can go in right when you take the class and you just fill out all the information, you do a submit, and it's just done for you. There's some other things, though, that are done automatically for us. So if we do something that's directly linked to ISACA, that's listed as ISACA, and they've sent it to you and they've said, oh, we'll give you one CPE credit for this, when you complete that, they automatically report it for you. If you ever are interested in seeing that, I love this feature.
I'd
love it if we had something
in
here. It makes a big difference. Because they actually keep, so our CPE for that is a 3-year total. They recommend you get 40 CPE a year, but they show you a little tracking device of exactly where you're at and what you need to have left, and they send you auto reminders saying, hey, you're only, you know, 80, or like you've hit 80 of your 120 requirement, and there's a lot of value there.
Yeah.
I love it.
I bet. And I think this is exactly what this guy's doing too, yeah. So I know it took a lot of work, especially with different states and their CPE requirements, to fine tune it to each state's, you know, criteria. I mean, it's a lot of work they went through. So I was impressed. The presentation was understandable. They weren't talking up here. They weren't, I even pulled her aside afterwards and told her how good she did, because it was really nice. But I still don't know how it works yet, because the little details are too small for me to see. But I like the idea. Let's just say that. We have our two new members sitting at this table, but we also had a confirmation of a new board member this last Tuesday? I can't remember. Last week. Jason Robinson, who's in the corner over there, we met him earlier through introductions, but we're excited to have him here today just to observe and kind of get a feel of what his new job is going to be. We're excited. We are still waiting to replace Candy, so we're looking. I think we put into our most recent newsletter, if you have interest in serving on any committee or the board, which we don't usually put the board out there, we also added board as a choice on our renewals this year, just because it's becoming difficult to find volunteers to serve on the board. It's not so bad filling committee positions, but board members' positions are a little bit tougher. I have been working with the governor's office. They are really interested in diversity. So I will be working with them as well. I kind of touched on the IT project. I don't know if there's any more I can really add to that, because I don't have much more than what I already said. So if you have questions, let me know. I touched on the key performance measures and on the temps. So I'm done with that. You guys have any questions about what else is going on? We're fully staffed, which is pretty cool.
So on the adopted budget, high level, any significant changes in terms of intergovernmental charges, or you've got DOJ is lined out, we're still on the common pay. I think there was a request for a large bump, but it didn't get approved.
It did get approved.
The large bump did, ultimately?
Yes. Yes. So they it adjusted what DOJ was approved for. It adjusted how what we were approved for, you know, their rates, and so it all just evened itself out. But yeah, there was no government rates had gone down in some places, and some just went significantly up. But it was all covered in the request, because they adjust to the service charges to the all the other agencies that affect those service charges happens. Right? So, yes, so far, so
good. Public records. The public records policy?
Yes. So, this policy is, we are just adopting DAS's policy on public records requests and public records management. This is an executive order, I believe, from the governor's office that all state agencies have this posted on their website. Some agencies develop their own records management policy. I started to do it, and then I was like, oh my gosh, really, this could take me days, because I didn't know. All what they wanted, but so DAS said, you can adopt our policy, just have your board approve the adoption of the policy, and I'm happy to post that. We already have our public records policy basically on the website. We have a public records form that we use often. We've been in the guidelines. There's a certain time frame where we have to respond and provide the records. Joel's in charge of that. So we've been doing good. This is just kind of, I think, the final piece.
Does this change anything that you do now, really?
Not really. Do you see it, notice anything? No, it's just kind of putting it in terms,
black and white.
Yeah.
So this is a model policy,
yes.
And it I would imagine this comment I'm going to make is going to apply to many of the volunteer type boards that we have, where it discusses that we have our official email address, state-provided email address. The vast majority of the board members do not, if not all of them don't. And it does talk about when it does have to be used at a personal level. Should there be, do you know if there are other boards modify this model policy to deal with that fact?
I don't. Our internal policy, maybe, and I could add it to this too, is that we always ask that you separate your board emails into a separate little folder in your email so that they're segregated from the rest of your emails. I think that's what our advice has been. I can add that.
My understanding was that if staff is on an email, that we didn't have to do any special record retention because it was in your system, right? And so, and we don't communicate directly. So I'm not sure there's really anything that I've been doing separate in that way because
that makes sense.
You're always, as long as someone with the state email address is on there, they're taking care of the record.
It's being captured that way.
Yeah, you're right. Thank you for remembering that.
Yeah, our new people are kind of.
Yeah, sorry.
Thinking ahead.
Who's the custodian of the record, right? Like, so the Board of Accountancy is not so much you. So, in theory, you shouldn't be talking about board business outside of board meetings anyway, so you shouldn't really have anything else other than what's been communicated to staff.
Unless it's come from staff to start with.
Exactly. So I don't think that this really affects.
Well, just the idea that, you know, it says generally most people have a state-authorized email address. Well, the boards and commissions and whatnot probably do not.
Right, they don't. Yeah, I still think that this covers, though, because of the fact that most of it is going to be coming from board staff anyways. So. The point is this is where they're able to capture everything that would be part of that request if necessary. I don't necessarily think it needs to be changed, but we can do a double check on what other boards are doing as well, just to make sure.
Okay. So Kim, item C.
Oh, we should vote on passing this.
We need to vote on the public records policy.
We're going to adopt it.
Okay.
Can I ask a question before you do? Just looking at this from a long-term perspective, since it's adopting a model policy that's there and boards can modify it, is there any way to avoid OSCPA and OAIA from having to submit a public records request before each meeting, and for example, before each board meeting, to receive the packets, and then also before, for example, like laws and rules? I'm appreciative for us to be available, you know, as guests at that meeting, but that means we're having to submit a records request for those meetings as well.
So, I mean, I'd have to do some research around it. It's my understanding that unless we're doing it sort of like across the board for people in general, we can't do it individually. Mm-hmm. So, which is why, you know, we've changed it going forward. So if the board would like, I can do some additional research around that.
I think good additional research, additional information would be helpful.
Yeah, not trying to be cranky. It's just, it's a little bit of a barrier for ease and being able to be prepared ahead of time. I mean, Joel was great about getting things out to us since he could. But, you know, there's that ease of being prepared. And the other thing, too, is, and it was my mistake, I did not understand that applied to laws and rules as well. So, you know, I got to the meeting and I was unprepared. Fortunately, I know rules and, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, we don't have to be unprepared for the meetings. And so, thank you.
So I guess as a question, as you indicated, doing more research, are we saying that we would then not necessarily adopt this policy?
You still adopt the policy.
This is a records management.
Okay.
She's talking about public records requests.
Okay. Public records management. Okay. Yeah. I make a motion to accept the public record management policy as presented.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, and this passed. Okay, item C.
So, I'm happy and sad for this day, but you've been a wonderful chair, and I'm happy that you're going to do some fun traveling and all the things that you do, that you've been a great chair. You ran the meetings like this. We're already doing really good on time. It's only 10:10. But here's your plaque.
Thank you.
Here's our appreciation for you.
I love that one.
And we have a chocolate cake for you.
Do that after lunch, maybe.
Whenever you want your cake.
Hold the knife.
Yes.
Yes.
But yeah. It's
oh.
been awesome working
Beautiful.
With you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Candy, can you just give us a kind of a little bit of rundown of your tenure with the Board of Accountancy and all of your activities with the board? You said one.
So I've been on for 5 years. I think the only committee liaison I really did was prop for most of that time. Yeah, and then went into doing treasurer and vice chair and chair for about the last year and a half. It's been
all the good and bad.
All the good and bad, yeah. The changing in executive directors was kind of a big thing for us. And I was really glad that came out as well as it did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's been really good getting to know everybody.
I'd like to express my thanks personally. I hope I can speak for the rest of the board too, is that you've been a great member and very much appreciate the effort and diligence that you put into your process.
Learned a lot that you can take back to your firm.
And always available to chat, which is always nice for me too.
Thank you, Candy.
Thank you.
Nice. Okay, well,
we'll have cake.
And we will have cake. It won't be chintzy on the cutting of the slices either. Saying. Okay.
We like bacon, we like chocolate.
That's right. Okay, just moving down the list. New business. So request to reinstate the expired license, last name Bolin.
So this one might want to talk about.
Okay, so we'll hold that one.
Have some advice to get?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And on item B, we have an appearance 11-3. So I guess we're going to come back to 17.
Mm-hmm. Let's come back to 17.
Okay.
Pardon me? I have a quick
break. Sure. Yeah. Let's go ahead and take a quick
break. Yeah, we're going ahead of schedule, so.
That's okay.
Do you want to switch places, Nancy?
Yeah, we can do that. All right, so everyone, we're going to go ahead and enter into executive session. Under the authority of ORS 192.660.2.F.H, consideration of records exempt from public from disclosure and counsel advice.
Everybody, you can't stay,
I'll
say.
Yeah.